Hi, mamas. It's Danielle Goss, the lactation consultant, otherwise known as the lactinator. I am super excited about today's episode. I am here with Danielle Dodd from Married at First Sight Season 7, and she is here with me. We're going to just chat about motherhood and about HELP syndrome. Danielle, thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited. Now, I'm going to give a quick little bio. You're 32, originally from Seattle, moved to Texas 6 years ago on a whim. Girl, what a whim that was. What a life-changing whim. Was on Married at First Sight and has been married for 2.5 years with an 18-month-old little girl and a baby boy on the way. That's awesome. I never figured out how to make boys. I only have girls. Technically not my problem. It is. I'm just the oven. But how excited are you?
We're really excited. It's definitely nice. It takes the pressure off now having one of each. So
yeah,
can kind of relax a little bit.
Is Bobby so excited to have a boy?
He is. That's like been his whole life dream is to have a little boy. And he's the third generation Robert. So they were really excited to be able to pass on the family name again.
So he'll be Robert the third.
The baby will be Robert the fourth.
Okay. Look at that. That's kind of cool.
I know you don't hear of that very often.
You don't, but that's so rad. I love that. Okay. So what brought you to Texas? Cause man, God just decided, hey, Texas, let's make your life awesome. What happened?
I was sick of the rain. I lived my whole life in Seattle and I just really wanted to experience something different. So I had a girlfriend that lived in Austin at the time. So I decided what the heck? I packed up my stuff and drove down and I've lived in a couple different places all over Texas, but have been here ever since. I don't think I'll ever go back.
That's amazing. I have been to both Seattle and actually we were just in Austin a year ago just to kind of check it out and eat the amazing barbecue that is Texas. But I hear you, girl, about the rain. We went in the summer and it was cold. Like I was not ready for that in Seattle. Super cool. The gum wall is disgusting, but super cool.
You get a couple nice weeks out of the year, but the rest of the time is kind of miserable.
Oh, girl. Okay. So yeah, I would have done exactly what you did. So you're moving to Texas. That's great. How long were you there then before? So you've been married 2.5 years. I can't believe it's been that long.
I know. It's gone by so fast.
That's crazy. We are avid, Married at First Sight watchers. And I was so stoked. My husband and I just there and we laugh. He's laughing at me. He goes, because another Danielle came on. I'm like, yes, she's going to be my favorite because she has my name. And it was, you guys were definitely one of my faves. And I just love, my favorite thing is to watch like when a groom looks at his wife and just the reaction. It's just so precious. So it's cool to have been able to see you guys. Well, I mean, I don't virtually see you guys. Just the journey you've been on is fantastic. And now you're going to have another little one. So my kids are 20 months apart. And I remember those days, like that first year is a little rough. Not going to lie.
Yeah. I hear we're in for a wild ride.
You are, but honestly, the best gift I ever gave my daughter was a sibling. It was fantastic. I mean, they fight all the time, but are best friends. It just depends which shoes are involved now that they're teenagers.
Yeah. I feel like I've gone through a roller coaster. At first, I felt awful even wanting another kid because you're going to be taking attention away from your firstborn once this new baby comes, but I do think it'll be definitely for the best.
Oh, totally. So they'll be about 20 will be about 2 years apart.
They'll be about 22 months.
Yep. You're doing what I did, girl.
Yep.
Yeah. That first year with two in diapers, it's a whole different thing. I remember when, my youngest Elena started to crawl, Alyssa put a laundry basket over her and sat on her because she didn't want her to get to her toys, or she would like throw toys into like stuffed animals into her crib because she would be crying and she would be like, no more babies.
You're
in for a fun time, but
I'm sure she's gonna go through a roller coaster of emotions as well. She's very clingy. So we're trying to, I'm trying to separate her from my body as much as possible so we can kind of get used to it. But I do think it's gonna be a little rough on her at first.
It will, but she'll adapt. It's funny. we woke up one year, and my husband and I at 9 a.m. and we looked at each other and went, oh my stars, what just happened? And they were downstairs with a box of Cheerios. I think they were like 18 months and three watching Sesame Street. Aww. And we high five. We're like, this is why we did this.
Exactly. Exactly. I cannot wait for it. I know it'll be good. Her cousin, Bobby has a sister who has two little girls and they're 21 months apart. So very similar to you. And so we've got to kind of watch that. They're a year ahead of us. So we're watching them go through that. And they are just getting to the place where they're starting to do well together. So we're excited for that period.
That's so cool. My girls have cousins that are about that age difference. And it's been so fun watching them grow. They're so close. That's super cool. They're going to love that. Well, I wanted to kind of dive in. And if you want to share your story, because you have had quite the journey. And, you know, yeah. I've worked in the mother baby field for 17, almost 18 years, and have encountered HELP a few times. For those of you who don't know what HELP syndrome is, it is, to break it down, it's hemolysis, elevated liver enzyme and low platelet is what it stands for. But it can be quite scary. And I always, you know, it comes on fast. So why don't you guys share your story? Just let me know kind of like, how have you progressed since then?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely came on fast. It was something I had never heard of until I was literally about to deliver Olivia. And I don't even think it probably clicked until after. I remember Googling what HELP syndrome was in the hospital.
Oh, that's hard. Don't ever Google.
No.
I was like, let me be your Google. Google's my number. Oh, you poor thing. Because it's rare. It's like less than 20,000 people a year get that.
I know. And I'm hoping they do more research because I've heard from so many people that have had it. I don't think it's as rare as the statistics say. I've just heard from, I would be amazed at the amount of people I've heard from if that was a true statistic, because it seems much more common. There just really isn't a lot of research or a lot known about it. So I'm hoping that things progress, you know, in the future, but I'm hopeful I don't have to experience that again with this pregnancy. So far it's been.
How are you feeling?
I feel really good. Boy hormones seem to be much different than girl. I was so sick when I was pregnant with Olivia. It was awful. And I remember dreading being pregnant again and just wanting to get it done and over with. And this time it's just been so much more manageable. I've been able to enjoy moments that I didn't get to enjoy before. So I'm hoping that is a good sign for delivery, that, you know, maybe it'll be a much more enjoyable experience.
Totally. Well, and did you end up having to have a crash C-section?
I didn't. I actually got very lucky. I was already 39 weeks, so I had already progressed pretty far. But as soon as I was diagnosed, they were able to put me on Pitocin, and she came within 12 hours. So they gave me the chance to try to deliver vaginally first. And of course, if that didn't work, they were going to do a C-section. But because I was progressing so fast, they just let me keep going, and she made her entrance pretty quick.
Yeah. That's actually not very common.
No.
At least not the hospital I worked at. Like, that's usually when, and I do agree with you. Like, I feel like there's a lot more cases than we're being told. And
yeah.
I feel like that's the case with a lot of our syndromes. Like, it's just not talked about. And that's part of why I wanted to bring you on, because it's a serious thing that needs to be talked about. And pregnant women need to be aware of the symptoms. But in our hospital, it was an immediate crash C-section. So that's super cool that they allowed you to do that with having high blood pressure. Like, that's amazing.
I feel so grateful for the doctor. You know, it was the middle of the night. So, you know, everybody was on call. It was, you know, very scarce staff, but the doctor that I got, I'm so grateful for her, because so many stories that I've heard, doctors automatically, you know, they don't encounter this a whole lot. So they do automatically rush to a C-section.
Yep.
And it's just so much more dangerous because you lose so much more blood that I'm grateful that the team that I got was able to allow me to deliver the way that I did, because it was a much better experience.
Oh, and the recovery is so much easier too. I mean, when you think about, you know, C-sections, like major abdominal surgery, which our mom brains click on and we're just like, I got to take care of a kid. Doesn't matter what I just went through. But you're right. You know, the big part of HELP is that you have low platelets, you know,
so,
you know, you're going to have issues with bleeding and clotting and all those things. And then your blood pressure and the risk of stroke and all of that goes up. So you had a super stellar team, because I know whenever we would encounter a case, it was like everything stopped. We hit the ground running. Mm-hmm. It was like prep the OR and go, you know? So
yes,
that's very, very cool. Okay. So you went in, what were your symptoms? What did you feel? Did you have any idea?
No, I had no idea. Like I said, it came on fast. I had an excellent pregnancy. I did not have any blood pressure issues. I went in that morning actually for my 39 week appointment. I had not progressed. So we went ahead and made my 40 week appointment. We did notice at that time, my blood pressure, I think if I can remember right, it was like 153 over 91, which is high over the threshold. But I also had no protein in my urine. And so the doctors just said, okay, we're going to watch you. You know, they didn't give me anything else to look for. They just sent me home. I made my 40 week appointment. And I actually had a baby shower later that day.
Same day.
I went to my baby shower. I felt great. I remember feeling tired. I remember now looking back and feeling this like pain in my left shoulder, mm-hmm. and thinking, man, I cannot wait to have this baby. I'm going to go get a massage. My body does not feel good. I'm just tired and I'm ready to get this baby out. But other than that, I felt great until about halfway through the baby shower. I remember feeling what I would describe as indigestion. Like,
yeah,
you know, you get that feeling in your chest where you're like, if I could just swallow a little bit of air and burp, I can let this pressure out of my chest.
Sure.
And it wasn't working and it started getting worse. And it actually, by the end of the night, I wasn't even able to lay down. It just was not getting better. And so once that pain right in the center of my chest, actually, mm-hmm. And everyone says to watch out for upper right quadrant pain, and mine presented in the middle of my body instead of on the right side.
Interesting.
So anyways, it didn't get better with a hot shower, trying to lay down, gas medication, nothing was making it better. And so I finally called the doctor and the doctor said, listen, if it's not getting better, you should probably just come in to get checked out. And so I did. Nobody could figure out why I was in pain. They kept giving me different cocktails of pain medicine. And
the GI cocktail, I bet. That stuff's nasty.
Oh, I don't remember. It was a couple different things. And they'd give it to me and come back and check in. They'd say, did it help? And I'm like, no, I'm still, my chest is just on fire. At that point, I was vomiting so much that I couldn't even produce any urine for them to check. So we don't even know if any protein was present at that point.
It had to be.
Yeah. We went on to take some blood. And so I remember the nurse coming back and saying, you might as well park your car. She sent my husband out, had him park the car. And she said, you know, we're going to go ahead and deliver the baby. And so I'm like, okay. You know, at that point I was so drugged up on pain medicine. I was like, great, let's get this baby out.
Yeah, let's get the show on the road.
Yeah. And so my husband, every time he was stepping out to call family members who don't live, you know, all my family lives in Seattle. So they're, you know, he's calling them and they're trying to figure out if they're going to fly down here. It was a whole ordeal, but I really didn't understand what HELP syndrome was or what the risks were or anything until a couple days after I had given birth, which honestly is probably for the best.
Yeah. You know, those drugs probably helped you in more ways than you think at that point.
Yes. You're kind of on cloud nine at that point. I remember, you know, being interviewed and they're like, how are you feeling? Bobby's like, how are you feeling? I'm like, I feel great. This is good. I remember texting my friend saying, you know, the doctors are rushing around. They're saying all these things are serious. I don't know. I feel great. Olivia's coming. I'll text you guys pictures when she's here. I was totally oblivious to what was happening, which I'm now much, much, much more grateful for.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes that's just a God thing where he's like, okay, we're going to take this out. You're not going to know what's happening. And we're just going to let it all figure itself out, that's pretty impressive with how high, I mean, that's a high, for people that don't know, that's high. That blood pressure is very high. So
yes.
Unbelievable. So you go in, you deliver. Was Bobby aware of everything going on? I mean, obviously, yes. But like, how was he throughout the process with you?
He was great. Anytime he really had to panic or anytime he needed to talk to family, he would actually step out of the room. And I remember being so frustrated. I'm like, gosh, he keeps leaving. Like, why is he not hanging around? But he didn't want to freak me out. I was in such a positive mood at that point. Anytime he really needed to break down, he would leave the room. So it actually was much more beneficial for me. But yeah, it was good. She had her own team of doctors the entire time who – they went in and placed, you probably know what it's called, I don't, a little monitor on her head, to make sure she was never stressed out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she did great the whole time. So I feel very lucky that she was never affected by anything that my body was going through.
What a fighter, man. That's incredible. So, yeah. So basically, for those who don't specifically understand, if you were to Google, which be careful when you Google, there's everything's crazy on there. Like, you, I swear if you Google like a sneeze, it ends up sounding like a cancer. Like, it's terrifying. But true HELLP syndrome, which you had, I mean, it's rare, but the mortality rate is 30%. There's a very strong chance you're going to lose mom and baby in deliveries. So I'm sure they were prepping Bobby for that. And, you know, he's trying to be the stronghold and kind of carry through and be there for you when I'm sure he was panicking. Cause here you guys are, I mean, you hadn't been married that long and, you know, you had a surprise baby and all these kind of are, I mean, the whirlwind of your guys' relationship alone was a lot. And then to take on something like this, I can only imagine the weight on his shoulders, but it sounds like he did a stellar job supporting you, which is awesome because it is a scary, scary moment. And I'm so glad you were oblivious because that's how it should have been. I'm so glad for you. Was your coloring off? Did they mention that? Like, were you gray or yellow at all?
I don't remember any of that. I remember almost being refused an epidural because my platelets were so low at that point. They were so scared to, you know, stick me with any kind of needles.
Yeah.
And I remember just begging because that was the only thing in my birth plan. I was like, please, 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 please. And I finally convinced them to do it. I was right on the cusp and,
you know, epidural in the parking lot, please.
Yeah. So they did give me that. But I don't remember much else other than a couple days later, the doctor had come in and just kind of given me an overview of, you know, what my body had gone through. And she had just given me kind of a time frame because it had come on so fast and it can come on so fast. Mm-hmm. She had said, you know, she thought if I had waited another 3 or 4 hours, it probably wouldn't have been a good outcome for me or baby. And so that's something that, you know, I wish was talked about more because those are very serious symptoms and they come on so fast that anybody that's pregnant needs to be aware.
True. I always used to say, when in doubt, check it out. Yeah. I am the worst patient in the world. Like, I will send everyone to the hospital, but when it comes to me, And I have lupus, so I have a wacky body. So I do agree. Like, moms need to know about these warning signs because there's so many of times we're just like, I'm going to wait it out, or it's no big deal. It's indigestion, right? Like, and you're
especially if you're a first timer, you have no idea what's normal and what's not. And even the second time around, I don't necessarily know what's normal and what's not. But knowing those things, I wish doctors would talk about even preeclampsia. I mean, those are very big things to look out for, and nobody ever warns you. At least I wasn't ever warned.
They kind of glaze over it of like, if you have a headache or you see something that, you know, you can put your thumbprint in and come in, but every pregnant woman swells, you know,
and I know
you're going to have headaches and you're going to have indigestion. So there's so many times I feel like because pregnancy symptoms alone mirror so many of the serious side effects, we just kind of glaze over it and don't think about it, you know, because nobody wants to go to the hospital and be sent home. It's just not comfortable, but I'm so glad you listened to your body. But for all pregnant mamas and even, you know, mamas in general, especially with your kiddos, when in doubt, check it out. I would much rather see you and send you home than have, you know, something scary or you're delivering in the kitchen. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So after Miss Olivia was born, were there any complications? Were you guys good?
I ended up having some trouble with my blood pressure for just a couple days after. So I feel pretty lucky. It went down within 2 weeks and back to normal. But I was in the hospital for about 5 days. And Olivia was great. She actually got discharged before me. And so that got a little complicated because Bobby couldn't leave the hospital unless he took her with him. And he's like, what am I supposed to do with this newborn baby? So we kind of had to make adjustments because, you know, we wanted to stay together as a family unit instead of trying to separate. So
they wouldn't let her stay with you?
They would not. Since I was still a patient and she was technically discharged, if Bobby left, he had to bring her with him. So, and he was freaking out. He's like, what am I supposed to do with this newborn baby? So, luckily we have friends that are close by that could take care of the dogs, and family was on board. So we were able to get everybody, you know, on board to help us out. But yeah, that hospital stay was definitely not anticipated.
Oh girl, that's rough. That's super poor Poppy. He's like, what in the actual hell do I do now?
I know. And I was so out of it. You know, they put you on that magnesium sulfate, oof, which totally takes you out of it.
And it's awful. It does not feel good at all.
I don't remember necessarily going. I remember them explaining to me, the nurse that she was hooking me up, and she goes, did they explain to you the symptoms? I'm like, no. She's like, well, okay, it's, you know, too late. It's starting now, but you're going to feel like you have the flu. And I don't necessarily remember any of that. I remember feeling very hot, but I don't remember the first day. I don't remember switching rooms. I don't remember anything. And so the nurses were so sweet. They taught Bobby how to swaddle. He changed diapers for the entire time we were at the hospital. I couldn't even get out of bed. So he would bring her to me whenever she had to eat. But other than that, he was a rock star.
What a good daddy.
I know. Yeah, I don't know how to swaddle. He's great at it, but I have no idea. Oh,
I have a video. Girl, I've got you. I will send it to you. I call it my miracle baby booby fairy dust swaddle. It'll be
amazing.
I will say, well, magnesium, I'm surprised. Yeah, I'm glad you don't remember anything. That's just a blessing, because Maggie does we used to start and be like, okay, so here's the puke bucket.
You're
going to feel great. You're going to feel like you're going through menopause. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, bless your heart. Okay. So thankfully you two did well. And I'm actually really, I'm glad they gave you the epidural, because that does lower your blood pressure, even though it's not with the platelet count, but girl, you got to have it.
That was my one thing. I said, I don't care what happens. You know, at that point, we're still a very positive outlook. I had no idea what HELLP syndrome was. I just remember my only thing in my birth plan was an epidural. As long as I get that, I don't care. You know, just get this baby out safely. I don't care how. Just do it. But I don't want to be in pain.
Heard. Well, now from the breastfeeding standpoint, I mean, obviously that's my world. That can be a rough start, you know, because
it was
the first 3 days. It sets you up so much for the next 3 months of what your milk supply is going to be. And you have, that's why we encourage, you know, of course, skin to skin, you know, feeding on demand. You know, I'm a big advocate for looking in the baby's mouths for ties, but again, that's my specialty, but you know, all the different things that can add up. But when you have a mama that's just out for the count because of being sick or what have you, you know, having the nurses or the daddy have to put the baby on the chest and try to latch for you, it's, your body is in such a sort of fight for flight mode. And when your cortisol hormone goes up, that's going to fight. That's the mortal enemy to oxytocin, right? So it's going to bring down all those hormones that make the milk. So it sets you up for failure.
Yep.
But how did it go?
You know, the first day went great, because, you know, you're not producing, you're just producing that colostrum anyways. Yep. So she was great, but it took about 10 days for my milk to come in, which is rough. And I remember, I think it was the third night in the hospital, she screamed the entire night and we could not figure out what was going on. And I finally broke down and just said, bring me, you know, they have those little ready to feed formula bottles. And we gave her, I mean, just the smallest bit of that. It couldn't have been I don't even know if it was a full ounce. And she slept so good after that. And I just knew, you know, she's hungry. She's obviously not getting what she needs from me. And I tried and tried and tried to feed on demand, but my milk never came in. I breastfed for 9 months, but we always had to supplement. There was never a time where I was providing enough milk for her. I came close at
good
one point.
For you. Girl, I was a total closet bottle feeder for 5 months and I do this for a living. Like that's impressive, the 9 months. Good for you. Well, and it's not shocking it was 10 days, because your body was in total shock. And you know, that it's 10 days is kind of a pivotal point for babies and mommies, because their stomach doubles in size on day 10. Yeah. So that's, and then of course you were describing on day 2 or 3, we have, baby's second night is actually a literal thing where they've realized they're no longer inside and they've gone from womb to room and they freak out.
Yeah.
So it's a neurological and feeding thing that kind of built up, but wow, I'm super impressed. Good job. 9 months. That's amazing.
It was definitely a lot of work, and it was very discouraging at times, because, you know, I'm not giving her all she needs. So, you know, you kind of have to ask yourself, am I producing enough to make this worth it? And I figured as long as I was producing, you know, I think I had read somewhere at that point, as long as she was getting, I think it was 2 ounces or 4 ounces of breast milk a day, she was getting the benefits.
Yeah. I think I probably told you that. I think I reached out and texted
you. It could have been you. Yeah. And yeah. So I had said, you know, if we ever get to the point where I'm not producing 2 ounces a day, that's when I will cut it off. But I made it to 9 months. And then there was a point, I think it was me, where I had missed a couple pump sessions. Yeah. And so I had stopped producing and I just finally threw in the towel.
You're like, oh, I'm done. And then you get to do it
again. I know.
But I will say, you know, I did a podcast a couple weeks ago about mom guilt, and it's like the biggest lie we tell ourselves. But it's so hard. I remember when I had to supplement my youngest with formula and feeling like I was failing her, and just, which is absolutely not true. Like number one, you feed a baby, whichever way works, breast, bottle, formula, whatever. Number two, you do what's going to make you the best mom for your baby. So in those instances, it's a matter of helping each other get to that happy medium, which is why there's the awesome, you know, thank God we have both options, right? So that we don't have to. We can do both. And I always tell mamas too, like when you've gone through, I'm impressed you were actually able to go as long as you did after surviving what you did, because your body usually would just shut it down. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be set up stellar for Bobby number four coming here. Mm-hmm. But you know, you look at the way your body's kind of adjusting and all of that goes in. It's, you've done a great job. The ounces, I always tell moms, like every drop they get is like vitamins to them. You know, mm-hmm. So like I've explained before, like this, the baby's saliva absorbs into your breast and your body will react to that and create antibodies or, you know, anything that the baby needs. If it needs more fat, more protein, anything, the saliva from the baby, our bodies react to. So even if the baby's only latching one or two times a day, or you're having to pump and bottle feed some of your breast milk, it's specific to your baby. And that's so important. Like even 1 to 2 ounces of whatever that specific thing is needed for the baby, it's going to set them up to be so much more healthy and prevent whatever they're going through. So it's a huge benefit. So that's a wonderful thing you did for her.
Well, you know, flu season kept me going. You know, it was so bad that year when she was little. I just remember thinking, if I can at least make it through, you know, flu season. And then once flu season was over, I'm like, okay, one more month and one more month and one more month. And that setting the small goals is definitely what helped me get as far as I did. Oh, because it can get overwhelming.
Oh my gosh. There's so much conflicting information out there. It's like, who do you trust? Who do you believe? And that's smart advice. You know, to setting short-term goals is super important.
It was so frustrating. You know, there are so many different lactation consultants out there, but the ones that I had, the one I spoke to in the hospital, she was great, but I wish that more of them were educated on special circumstances, because it was very generic information. Like if you do this and you do this, you're going to do great. And I remember going to the pediatrician when she was, I think maybe 2 months, and they have a lactation consultant on site. And she was like, okay, well, all you need to do is do this and this and you'll do great. But there was never any, like, I understand you went through HELP syndrome. I understand you're a MEG. Your body might not produce this. And so that made it more frustrating. So I'm like, I'm doing everything they're saying and it's still not producing 100%. And so I'm hoping that more education for like special circumstances gets put out there where they understand.
Yes.
You know, because it's hard. You're going to an expert and they're telling you 100% if you do these things, you're going to be set up for success. And then when you're not, you're like, why?
Exactly. Amen, girl. I am so glad you said that. On behalf of my profession, I am just as frustrated. I'm a little different. I mean, I'm an advanced practice lactation consultant. So I've gone through, I'm the one who gets sent the crazy cases, but regardless, so girl, next time you come to me.
Yeah.
But
hopefully there's no more crazy cases though next time.
I hope not, right? But you're 100% correct. There, I call it the game of telephone. I swear it depends when you've gone to school, who your mentors were, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I say this about anyone who's in medicine. You know, we're practicing medicine for a reason. You know, we're like, meaning we're still practicing. And you have to be willing to learn and you have to think outside the box, because every feeding situation is individualized. You know, in your instance, you would have needed a completely different plan and you have to think outside the box and get the full history. I mean, today is a perfect example. I had patients that both would have seemed identical, but they have two different, completely different plans for different supply issues. So mm-hmm. it's really individualized. And I agree with you. There needs to be more of that and more people willing to learn, even in the pediatric world, because, you know, I've had a pediatrician, Dr. Sacker, said, you know, as doctors, they wait for symptoms to arise so they can treat a disease, but we need to be willing to go back and treat it from the beginning before it gets there. Oh man. Oh girl, I got you. Next time. We're gonna do it. Okay. So you've been through hell and back, truthfully, and you've been such a beautiful voice about, you know, awareness for your, and being your own advocate for your own health and for your kids' health. How are you holding up gearing towards another birth? Cause you know, your mind's a powerful thing, and going into labor, you know, I remember even my second time, it was so much more difficult because I was afraid of repeats. Cause I had, you know, I had a delivery the first time. So I was remember going, my body, without me even knowing, holding back. And sometimes it's about letting go and trusting your body to allow it to go, but that's easier said than done.
So
what steps have you taken to kind of prepare?
I mean, I do think being your own advocate in anything that you're going through is important. You know, I love my doctor, but I don't necessarily agree with everything she said. And people are like, well, why don't you just change doctors? It's like, well, I don't need to. I can speak up when I feel, you know, I love her and overall, I think she's great. But there are things that I have done my own research on and read that, you know, I will demand for my care and I will make sure I get. Yes. So it doesn't necessarily matter who I see or who anyone sees, as long as you feel comfortable with your care, making sure you're getting what you're asking for. Mm-hmm. Just an example, she's so great. She really is. She's a great doctor, but she's very don't panic until you need to type doctor. And I'm more of a, I would rather be proactive. And so I had asked, you know, do you think I need to get a blood pressure monitor, keep that at home? And she's like, don't worry about it. You know, eventually once you get to the place of concern, we'll start seeing you weekly and we can just do it then. Well, I'm not comfortable with that. So I went and bought my own and I'm going to take my own blood pressure and I'm going to call when I'm concerned because that's what makes me feel comfortable.
Exactly. Good in this for pregnancy. You.
So, you know, not always taking your doctor's word for it, making sure you're questioning things and doing things that are going to make you feel, you know, like you are the most confident you can be going into any situation. So I don't ever want to look back and say, well, I wish I wouldn't have, you know, listened to my doctor, or I'm so mad that I took her advice. Like I can do those things for myself and everyone should.
Yes. That's so powerful. So true. Good for you. You have to be your own advocate. And I always say, you know, you know yourself better than anyone ever will. You know your kid better than anyone ever will. And if something seems off, you have to. And if it makes you feel better to take your blood pressure 3 times a day, girl, take your blood pressure 3 times a day. There's nothing wrong with that, but absolutely, you have to meet the families where they're at. Wow. How's Bobby? Is he ready?
I think so. I mean, I think it still feels so far away for him.
Yeah.
And it is, it's still far away and it's not, you know, I'm almost at 22 weeks. So we're not at any point necessarily where concern has been raised. Sure. So I think once we get to the third trimester, you know, we'll probably all be a little bit more on edge, but
of course.
I mean, I've spent a lot of time ever since Olivia was born. I have researched and I have joined support groups, which, you know, I've never been somebody that like needs the supportive, like I went through it. You went through it too. I'm here for you. I'm not that type of person. I don't need like the encouragement. I want experiences. Like, what have you been through? What steps did your doctor take? What experiences? I'm just a research freak and I love hearing other people's experiences. So then I can take in all that information, decide, you know, how I need to advocate for myself.
Heck yeah. That must be a Danielle thing. I love that.
I'm very stubborn in that way. And
I'm that way too. See, it's a Danielle thing. Like I feel safer when I'm more prepared and research, especially because I have learned time and time again, because both my kids have rare diseases. I do. You have to, researching is important because, you know, knowledge is power and you have to trust, you have to trust that going in, but that's true. I mean, there's a little bit of PTSD, I'm sure, going into this, and you'll hold your breath probably until you have that little dude in your arms.
Exactly. Yeah. I just, same thing, you know, with going through breastfeeding, same thing for now. I'm setting little milestones.
Yes.
I want to make it, you know, 24 weeks is a huge milestone for any pregnancy. So I'm trying to just get to the 24 weeks. And then at that point, you know, we'll set, you know, my 28 weeks, and each appointment is kind of my next goal. I just want to make it scare-free to the very next doctor's appointment. And that kind of helps make it a little bit more manageable for me.
Heck yeah, it does. And that's important for the baby too, because, you know, little ones in utero can feel all of that stress as well.
Yeah.
And they react to it, which is easier said than done, because life is stressful, especially right now. You know,
I
feel for all you mamas that are having to deliver during this crazy time. I'm hoping by the time you deliver, it'll be simmered down enough that we don't have to deal with it. But, you know, even going into my office, I feel like I'm from ET, because I have, you know, the whole getup on, which is important. It needs to be done, but it's going to be, that's so smart of you to set those short-term goals. And that's just how you approach parenting, period. Because once you figure out one step, something new happens, and you got to be flexible. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out, I still have mom brain and figuring out this motherhood thing. And my kids are 16 and 18. You know, parenting an adult child is very weird. Very
weird. I can imagine.
It happens in a blink too. Like, it's just, it's super, everyone tells you that when they're this age, when they're little, and you're like, cool, because I want to sleep through the night. That'd be lovely. But then you're here and it's so weird. I know.
Well, I feel like I just gave birth, and now all of a sudden I have an almost 2-year-old. So I definitely understand it's going to go by quick. And so I'm trying to enjoy every little moment I can.
She looks so happy though. She's the cutest little thing.
She's a happy girl. She's very sassy, but you know, I was going through a lot when I was pregnant. And like you said, they can feel everything you're going through. And I'm not super emotional pregnant, but I'm an angry pregnant person. And I was so angry with so many different situations we were put in while I was pregnant, that I feel like she's come out in kind of that very sassy, demanding way.
And that's so I'm good, like, oh though. My
gosh, I did that. I molded her into this little, like, angry, like, sassy, demanding girl.
Yes. Those are the best kind. I've got two of those. That's good, because then they fight for themselves and for what's right, and they grow up to be fantastic people. Sassy as hell, but fantastic. I love that. You know, it's funny you said about, you know, you've joined support groups, et cetera. I hear you. Like, I am so not that type of person that will typically – I don't like to share, like, be the woe is me gal. When you go through something rare, and you have, like, you know, I've shared about my daughter's journey a couple episodes ago. That's just not who I am. And so it's hard sometimes to accept the help and support.
Definitely.
Because I don't want people to look at me as the sick girl, or my kids as, you have, like, that's like, heck no, I want to show you how strong I am, and that I can defeat this, because I'm who I am. And, exactly. And sometimes being strong means being vulnerable and taking the time to step back and be like, okay, I kind of need someone to help me walk through this, and I'm not alone in this, and I need to just allow that. But it's easier said than done. And
definitely.
It's hard. It really is. Like, it's pulling teeth to get me to go to, like, support group. But I'll lead them. I'll teach them. But
yeah, I feel accepting the same.
That? Hell no. It's hard for sure. So little Olivia, has she been prepared for sisterhood in any way?
You know, I don't know how much she understands. We talked a little about little brother, and, you know, little brother's getting gifts here and there. And so we go put them in his room, and, you know, we've had that dialogue, and we've read some books, but I mean, she doesn't get it. So
no, she won't. Will they share a room?
They won't, but they'll be right next to each other.
That's actually really good. We tried to, we transitioned her. I mean, there's still so much a baby, you know, she should be in a crib for a while. And we transitioned her out of the crib into, like, a toddler bed. And I remember being very pregnant, and she was obsessed with playing with my hair. And then my foot fell asleep, and I got up and, like, totally fell and looked like an idiot. But, then when they share a room, it's like, there's still so much of this baby, and you don't realize that. I used to teach a sibling class back in the day, you know, preparing big brothers and sisters. Those are all, like, super sibling or something. But the little ones are just like, I don't get it. It's a doll that moves is basically what she's going to Yeah. But I will share with you something that was tremendously helpful for me, especially since my second one is where I had more of my breastfeeding issues. But I made a sibling breastfeeding basket, and it had toys and books and coloring things that she could only play with when I was breastfeeding.
And that's a great idea.
It was awesome. Like, I mean, she had a doll, like when mommy brought home her baby, Alyssa got her baby, and we would change the diapers together, and
yeah,
we kind of learn as we go, and she would go and, you know, do it her way and then try to do it on her sister, which was a nightmare. But, you know, involving her as much as possible was huge. But the basket was, someone passed that on to me, and I tell it to everyone who has kids close together. And believe it or not, Alyssa ended up being my bigger cheerleader for keeping going breastfeeding, because there were so many times I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. This, something's wrong. This hurts. And she wanted her basket, so she'd go and get it. And it kept me going. And it ended up being this, because they're going to get jealous, but they don't understand that emotion quite yet.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, and don't be surprised if she asks to breastfeed. That's a total normal thing. It's super weird at the time when they ask, because it's been so long. Like, I remember Alyssa going, I do, it's mine. And finally I'm like, okay, fine, here. And then
she
wants what she can't have, right? Because she's sassy. Yeah. We raise sassy girls. But I'll tell you, the nursing basket, point on. That helps me tremendously. But you had to put it up high where they can't get it in between feeds.
Yes. Yes. Perfect. We'll definitely put something like that together. We're already having, you know, COVID has presented a whole new set of challenges, because my husband already worked from home, but he would travel a lot. And so we didn't necessarily have to worry about the noise spectrum of things, but now he's on conference calls like all day long. And, you know, I'm having to set myself up to, what is the day going to be like? Well, he's on conference calls and I have two babies that are possibly screaming at the same time. Like, what is that going to be like? So we are really trying to figure out what that is going to do. Really just to our day, you know, how are we going to handle that? And I think, luckily we kind of have two wings of the house, and the kids' room is there. Both of them are on one wing. And so I think I'm just going to baby gate the hallway off, and they can kind of run back and forth between each room, but then I don't have to worry about one like running into the office screaming for daddy. Cause now I can chase her down. But you know, when you're feeding a newborn, you can't necessarily do that. So
that's why the breast friend pillow is so good. It's like a little life preserver. You can walk around.
Yes. Yes. So just trying to figure out how life is going to work in this new COVID world, because nobody knows what next year is going to look like at all.
I know, it's super bizarre. You'll have like Dodd's daycare in the other side of the house.
I know.
We have kids doing school at home, you know, one's in college at home, one's in a junior in high school, and then my husband's home for the first time ever. And that's an adjustment.
It is. It definitely is. Yeah.
I was used to,
oh my gosh, please go back to work. But now we've gotten into a groove. It's been much more helpful to have him be able to, you know, run out and take care of Olivia if I need to just, you know, shower really quick or, you know, use the bathroom. It's nice to have somebody just make sure she's not, you know, juggling knives or something.
So true. It's a whole new dynamic though. And it's a whole different level of stress when they're, I mean, we have three dogs cause we foster a lot. And so those are our three foster fails of our many,
dogs. I fostered, I think my count was up to 16 or 17 before I had Olivia. I had to take a pause, but I love fostering animals.
Isn't it the best? My 16-year-old has actually, we've fostered forever, and it's just so rewarding. And we always have animals coming in and out, and she whelped two litters by herself.
Oh my gosh, it's so fun.
And then of course, one of them, had like fading puppy syndromes and ended up being like canine herpes, which who the heck realizes that with a dog?
Yeah.
We ended up bottle feeding. I mean, super weird. Like when we were like, okay, all right, mama got around. Okay. But we're bottle feeding these puppies. And how can you not keep the baby when you're bottle feeding?
I know.
So I've said, we gotta take a break. And now she rescued a pony with dwarfism. So now we've like, I'm like, okay,
oh my gosh,
we have all these foster animals. I'm like, we gotta take a minute and break.
Yep. That's how I was for a long time. And then I had fostered my last one. I was probably about 6 months pregnant, and My specialty was puppies, and you know, they're a little bit like babies. It's exhausting, and I had to just throw in the towel and say we're taking a break for a couple of years because I just can't. You know, I finally got Olivia sleeping. I don't know if I can deal with a puppy in the middle of the night right now. So we had to take a break, but it is the best experience. And I can't wait for them, you know, when the kids get a little bit older to experience it.
It's really good for the kids. It's like, yeah. And you know, a lot of it is my daughter who does it because she wants to grow up to be a neonatal specialist for animals because she's gone and learned about all it. Because we, and now because of my medical, you know, education, well, the foster, like the OC foster care will call us when they have weird, you know, like this puppy needs to be NG tubed, or, you know, this one was premature, or we had my last foster fail, which I'm so glad, I love her. Her name's Tootsie. We named all the litter after musicals because we're musical theater nerds, but she had an enlarged esophagus. So we had to literally wear her in a baby carrier and feed her. Aww. So it's like, how can you not when you're dealing with
these? I know.
But you're right. It's like a newborn. Every 2-3 hours you're up feeding them. It's crazy.
Yep.
It prepared you for motherhood though.
it definitely has made me a much more patient person. You know, when I first started fostering, I was such a neat freak. And you know, having puppies who cannot control their bladder all over your floor and waking you up constantly. It just gives you a much more patient perspective. So I definitely think that has prepared me in a lot of ways for having a kid. You don't freak out over every little thing now.
And you're used to poop and pee, like exactly. So much. It's
literally
of it.
No big deal. So much. I did. Yeah. I could only do a couple. I've never whelped a litter. That's on my bucket list to do, but I've done a couple puppies at once and it's a lot. I mean, I remember going through just rolls and rolls and rolls of paper towels because, yes, you know, it's just a lot.
And Clorox wipes. And then we don't have any Clorox wipes now, which is super frustrating. But it is a lot of poop when you have more than one puppy.
Exactly.
Did Bobby totally transition into the – you had Henry, of course.
I had Henry,
Sorry about that.
It's okay. I mean, Henry had a very good couple years. I had him – I got him right when I moved down from – Washington, I was living alone and I just wanted a buddy. And so I started fostering and he was my first foster and he ended up being a foster fail. Mm-hmm. And he had a couple good years. He was very sick when I got him. Like, I don't know if he would have made it another week if we had not gotten him care. And so we really went through a lot together, nursing him back to health. And he ended up being the happiest, most spoiled dog ever. So I do feel good about that. I gave him some really good years and he was very loved. So that was definitely a good experience. But yeah, Bobby, he transitioned well. He's done a couple puppies with me.
Good. That's good.
He knows how much work it is.
Yes. It's good. It's good training.
He was my biggest cheerleader for taking a break because I was really having a hard time separating myself, but I was so exhausted when I was pregnant with Olivia that he was like, you just got to, you know, throw in the towel for a little bit. But, you know, and it'll probably be another year or two before we can start back up. But, you know, once the kids get a little bit older and they can understand and directions and things like that, I think it'll be really good for them to grow up with that. You know, just having, it's just a fun thing to do.
Yeah. And it teaches them a ton about patience and everything. And now you have your own little critters that you get to focus on for a little while, which is important. Well, I am. Thank you so much for coming on here. You've been an absolute delight. And I just, I'm super stoked, and not that you need me proud of you, but that you're bringing awareness to help, because there needs to be more advocates just in general for motherhood and, you know, health, and knowing that sometimes you just need to take the pressure off, especially with feeding, like breastfeeding, like, girl, take the pressure off and take it feed by feed and
just
feed your kid. You have such a special heart, and I was so excited to just be able to chat with you and talk about fosters and all that fun stuff, because you're definitely making a difference in this world. And, you know, watching you even on Instagram, it's just been, you have such a peace about you. You're very calming, and you're doing good work, whether you realize it or not, just inspiring people. So I just want to encourage you, like, what you're doing and how you're inspiring new moms and, you know, taking that step back from your career to invest into your kids. It's just beautiful to see. So I'm so happy for you guys. This is such a great time.
Well, I really appreciate that. I had a really good time, and hopefully we can do this again soon.
I would love that. Well, thank you, guys. This has been The Lactinator, otherwise known as Danielle Goss. If you want to go ahead, you can follow Danielle, the other Danielle, on Instagram. She has wonderful advice all the time. You can, of course, follow me. You know where to find me, at Danielle Goss, IBCLC. This has been so awesome. Thank you. Thank you. And good luck on your delivery.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. All right, guys. We'll see you next time.